ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 81st episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a fun interview with Adam Freeman, one of the creators of Night Watchman, a great graphic novel from Kickstart Comics, one of my very favorite comics companies. I talk with Adam about his creations, specifically about this book, which I really enjoyed, and I highly recommend it. I'm sure you'll enjoy what he has to say about the translation of comics into other forms of entertainment. He's got a lot of insight to share. Then I review this week's comics, and everything wraps up with Gianluca Glazer joining me to discuss the latest news and previews. As always, there's lots to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Adam Freeman, one of the creators of Night Watchman, a graphic novel released by Kickstart, one of my very favorite companies. It's available now, and I would look for Night Watchman in any place the stores are sold, or you'd probably go to Kickstart's website and find it. But Adam, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. It's good to talk with you. As we were talking about just a little bit before I started to record, was that you also worked on another Kickstart graphic novel that I really love called Hero Complex.
Yes.
So you and Mark have done a lot. Mark and Mark's last name is Bedarin?
Bernardin.
Bernardin. I always fracture people's names somehow. That's one of my curses. We don't have pronunciation guides with anybody's name, so we always have to fracture them badly.
People getting it wrong. It's okay.
Okay. Well, why don't we talk about Night Watchman some, because I think it's a great book. This is kind of in the line of a Batman-ish story. And, of course, Batman's my favorite character, so I like the way that this story unfolded. Now, Kickstart oftentimes has comics that are complete stories, and this can be a complete story, but it looks like the door is open for some more from Night Watchman. Was that intentional? Did you guys want to have more Night Watchman going forward?
Yeah, it was intentionally left as the origin story, and leaving the end open for more Night Watchman adventures. So, yeah, we'd love to do more.
Okay. Why don't you talk a little bit about what the story is as far as Night Watchman goes?
Sure. Night Watchman is centered on a detective, Carl Troutman, who is struggling in life. He's got a little bit of an alcohol problem. He's got a little bit of a gambling problem. He's going through a messy divorce. He's really financially strapped. And it's really about him fighting to keep his morals and ethics. There's a ring of dirty cops that want to bring him into the fold, and he's doing everything he can to pass on their offers, even though he could greatly use the money. And then on the flip side of it, there's a vigilante coming up in his city who, although probably mentally unstable, although obviously taking the law into his own hands, is really ethically the man that Carl Troutman wants to be. So it's an interesting kind of relationship and duality.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to me because the Night Watchman, who is something, and it's funny to me how he gets the name Night Watchman and why that's chosen. I got a big kick out of that. But it's interesting to me to see him move to the forefront. And there's an interesting development in here, too, as Carl decides to train him and show him how to handle himself so he doesn't get killed, basically.
Yeah. I mean, we really wanted to show the development of the Night Watchman over the course of the story. So the first time you see him, he's wearing just a black hoodie and a ski mask, and he's a little pudgy and not as agile. And then over the following months, every time you see him, he's slimmed down a little more. He has a bulletproof vest. He's developing. So many superheroes come out of the gate fully formed.
Yeah.
And since this is a guy, you know, doesn't have any powers, he's learning. And Carl, I think, sees something in him. Although he may not agree with his methods or his exact ideology, you know, he's doing it for all the right reasons. And that's something that Carl's struggling with. So I think he sees mentoring the Night Watchman as a way to maybe redeem himself or justify some of his not-so-above-board behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Carl's an interesting character in his own right. He's got a family he's trying to raise, but, you know, he's not in good relations with his wife. You know, the alcoholism, there's all kinds of things going on with him. And, of course, they're constantly trying to get him to go over to the dark side, as it were, in the book. And it's interesting that he resists that very strongly. And I get a sense from him that he wants to be good, but it's very difficult for him in the circumstances. And it's interesting because we often look at our lives and feel that we're struggling. And it was nice to see a cop who's actually trying to do the right thing, but finding it extremely difficult.
He's really having financial difficulties, and he has a bunch of dirty cops that are dangling a large amount of money in his face that could really cure all of his problems, as far as alimony, as far as gambling debts, as far as just his quality of life. And he's probably one of the few people on the force that are not part of this ring. So he's getting pressure there because, you know, the irony is he's seen as a troublemaker because he is the one good cop. Because if he's not on the payroll, you know, much like Serpico, if he's not on the payroll, he has something over those other cops and he can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I like the character. I like the fact that he goes through some growth as well as the Night Watchman. So where they end up in the end of the book is in a different place than where they start. And that's on several levels. I mean, the way that they interact changes by the end of the book, which I liked as well. And I'm not going to spoil anything because I want people to read the book. But it's a great, fun book. It's enjoyable because I really liked seeing a little darker tone. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the Kickstart books tend to be much lighter in tone. That's not to say there's not some humor in the book. The Night Watchman gets his foot stuck in a pot at the very beginning.
Right.
And there's all kinds of little things that go on that are quite funny. And a good thing about a good story is that it'll have elements of humor with it as well as the serious stuff.
There's humor like that in all the books that Mark and I do. Sometimes, like Hero Complex, it's more of a kind of action comedy. This was definitely darker. We were very specific about the color palette that we wanted. Visually, we used David Fincher's Seven a lot as inspiration. It was kind of a nondescript, crappy city, raining, gray, probably the worst parts of every city we've been to.
Interesting. These things always remind me of like New York or Chicago or places like that where there's quite a lot going on. It's difficult to manage all this. And so what happens is a lot of times things go through the cracks, and that's kind of what I feel like
right.
is going on with this.
There's too much ground to cover. The police can't be everywhere. You know, there's not enough manpower.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, when you've got millions of people and they're all going their different ways and doing their different things, you only got a limited number of people on the force, and it's very difficult to catch all this stuff going on.
Right, exactly right.
But I really like the fact that the Night Watchman is, and this is actually based in reality, it seems to me. There are a lot of people who are going around now as vigilantes trying to help. Like, I think in Seattle there was a guy that was doing this.
Yeah.
And so this is not anything that's really far-fetched.
You know, really, I have to echo the sentiments in Kick-Ass. It's like, why aren't there more people out there doing this? Mm-hmm. And the other line that we really balance with the Night Watchman is you're never really sure if he's mentally stable. You're never really sure if he's homeless or not. You know, there are so many people out on the streets right now, especially in New York City and L.A., that so many of the homeless have mental problems, and that's why they've left shelters, they've left their family, they've been turned away by friends, etc. So I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that one of them would want to, in their mind, do good and fight crime.
Well, you know, you have to wonder, anybody who throws themselves in the way of danger, you wonder about their sanity to some degree. Most of us have self-preservation mode that comes in when something like that. We duck.
Right.
And I always have to look at, like, policemen and firemen, and I see this. I was watching a show the other night, and I was struck by, and I think it was the Judge Dredd movie, Dredd, and all people are running in one direction, and the judges are going the other way.
Right.
Towards the danger. And I always thought, you're not necessarily a completely sane person. You have to turn that self-preservation off. And I think that makes people feel like you're not entirely with the program. But we need people like that. We have to have things like that, or else there's no way to stop criminals.
Right. Certain people either have that extra gene or they're missing a gene, depending on your point of view, you know, that make them run towards danger. You know, I was talking with a Marine who was in uniform. And if you ever look at a Marine's uniform, the flags on their uniform appear backwards. And I said, why is the flag backwards on your uniform? And he said, because when you hold it above your head and you run into battle, that's the direction that it blows. never run away from battle. So, yeah, to your point, I think we need people like that. And the Night Watchman has that. He has a lot of other faults. Colt Troutman has that, but has a lot of other faults. You know, people are not perfect, and we really enjoyed making these characters deeply flawed.
Well, isn't that more real? I mean, there aren't any perfect people running around. And to see somebody who chooses to go and be a hero is something that, you know, we'd all like to be, but not many of us are certain we would do that.
Yeah, I mean, look at characters that we grew up with. For every Superman that it's his destiny, you know, Batman, Bruce Wayne, has some serious mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps it together pretty well when he has to in public, but he's not a mentally balanced guy. Mm-hmm. No. What if you just took that to the nth degree and he could not function as well as Bruce Wayne could?
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's the kind of thing we wanted to explore.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me because, you know, Superman and Batman are opposites in many ways. And before they were just the same people, one guy had powers and one didn't, and then they switched it around so that they were very unique individuals. And I like that about that. And, you know, you have to say that between Carl and the Night Watchman, there are a lot of differences between them. And I like the fact that these two guys, they got along because there were some similarities, but there were a lot of differences as well. And to me, it was a great thing to show that even people who have a lot of difference between them can get together with a common cause.
Yeah, and it's really, with Carl, a case of seeing a man in the Night Watchman that by all accounts is crazy, in quotes, but has a huge chunk of him that's the man that Carl wishes he could be. You know, the Night Watchman opens up with a little monologue from Carl talking about how he's been on the force for 20 years, and when he saw his first dead body, he puked. But he also is yearning for that more innocent time when he joined the force for all the right reasons, and he wasn't wrapped up in red tape. It was, he reported for his shift, he went out, and he did the best job he could and tried to help people, and then went home at night to his family. And now flash forward to 20 years later and the family's gone. The line between right and wrong is blurrier and getting harder and harder to differentiate. And like so many people hitting middle age, he wishes he can go back and do it differently. And I think through the Night Watchman, he sees a chance to affect some change, even though he has a lot of misgivings.
Like I said before, the ending is a really interesting development in the relationship between these two guys. And I don't want to spoil it, but I just think it's such an interesting point that their growth takes them in what appears to be different directions. And I really, when I got to the end and I saw that, I said, that was a great way to end this book. I love the ending really tremendously. And did you guys know that's where you wanted to end the story this time?
Yeah, we did. Each one of them, each character is facing their own battles. It's Carl trying to be the good cop. It's the Night Watchman who has, at first, a single purpose and a reason for being. You know, another thread that's woven through the book is concurrently with Carl helping the Night Watchman and training him when he can and slipping him, you know, a bulletproof vest and things from the supply closet is Carl trying to keep his ethical challenges and the dirty cop ring secret from the Night Watchman. And as the Night Watchman gets more experienced and starts to move from small fish to big fish, mm-hmm. he's getting closer and closer to Carl's ring of dirty cops. So mm-hmm. their paths start to intersect in several different ways.
Yeah, yeah. There's a really interesting place where Carl understands that the Night Watchman isn't perceiving everything that he could, and he starts to wonder whether he's actually going to pick this up. And they actually have a discussion about who's the better detective, mm-hmm. which I really liked, that maybe the Night Watchman could be even a better detective than Carl is, even without all the experience that Carl has.
Yeah, the Night Watchman has that purity. He's doing it for one reason. He's doing it to do good. He's not as three-dimensional as Carl. He has a single purpose. Carl has his job, a million different pressures from different angles of his job, pressures from home, trying to live a life. You look at animals, I don't know of any animals that need to see a therapist. You know, they're concerned with surviving, eating, going to the bathroom, and maybe getting scratched once in a while. And that's what they're concerned with. So their life is simpler and their tasks are more focused. Carl, like all of us, as you get older and you have more and more responsibilities, you're pulled in a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great line that I notice a lot of people when they talk with you always want to bring up, and I have to bring it up too because I enjoyed it. It's a line where Carl says, a crime scene is the cop version of the water cooler.
Yeah.
And I like that line a lot because that's the kind of thing that I'm sure other writers of crime drama would like to have come up with. It's just a wonderful description of what happens when they get together. They're all standing around, and you always wonder when you see a crime scene, there's all these cops all standing around talking to each other. You know, what are they doing? Well, they're discussing what's going on there, and I just thought that was a great way to express that sequence.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, look, the policemen, I can't commend them enough. They keep us safe, and I could never pretend to have the courage to do what they do. But at the same time, not everyone is a superhero. Not everyone is a great cop or has the same work ethic. And it was just a thought that Mark and I had. It's to your point. Even sometimes on the side of the road, you'll see like a traffic stop or someone with a flat tire, and there's three cop cars there. And you wonder, do they really need all that support? Or is it an excuse to get out of their car, stretch their legs, and BS with their coworkers for a couple minutes or
whatever? It's not a bad thing either. It's just that they're human beings and they need to interact occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, if your job was sitting by yourself in a patrol car driving around all day, I think you'd be a little starved to take a break and have some human companionship. But yeah, it's something we always noticed, and Mark and I always like to drop little observances like that into our scripts, and I'm glad that you picked up on it, and hopefully other people will. It's just an observance, and if it resonates with people, it means you hit something on the head.
Yeah, it's very good. The scripting is great. The pacing is great. I like the characters, and I like the dialogue quite a lot. And I also enjoyed the art by Javi Fernandez, who also worked on Hero Complex with you.
Yeah.
It's very clear. It's very easy to tell what's going on. Now, I know that Javi probably didn't do the coloring. Who did the coloring in this? Because the coloring is very different from Hero Complex.
You know, that's a great question. In this digital age, you have people from different countries doing different aspects of the book, and you never meet, and you just talk over email, and you work very closely on something. But if Javi walked in the room right now, I wouldn't know who he was.
Okay, it says right here that Juan Manuel Tamburis did the coloring. It's much more of an urban, darker, bluish feel than Hero Complex. Of course, when you've got heroes running around in bright costumes, you're going to have a much brighter color. And so to me, one of the things that's great about this is it's darker, almost depressing kind of a coloristic to it. So I kind of did want to mention how great that was. I love the clear art. I also love the tone of the coloring, which is a little more morose than
Hero Complex. He did a great job. And Mark and I, we view artists as complete collaborators, and we want to see what they bring to the table. That said, the scripts that he and I write are also very, very detailed. And each panel is described really, really specifically, including the, quote, camera angles, the color palette, and all that. And we always want the artist to one-up us and come up with something even better. But at least with the description that we supply, you know, the default is there, and we know it'll be what we always envisioned. And the color palette, we went back a few times because we wanted it always to be more neutral and a little more bland. Like I said, that Seven look, not a happy place to live.
Well, like Hero Complex, this is a book that deals with a hero, but not necessarily in the same place. And I'm glad that you guys are able to look at different aspects of what being a hero means. And I really enjoyed the book a lot. I hope a lot of people are going to be able to pick it up and buy it. It came out in December, is my understanding. And it's still available. If you can't find it, ask your store to order it. Or I think you can go through the Kickstarter website.
You can also go to Amazon as well. As much as I want to support the mom and pops, if your store doesn't have it or can't order it, you can always go to Amazon, I believe.
Very cool. Very cool. So I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. If you like Batman, you'll enjoy this book just as much as I did, because I thought it was great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now you and Mark have been working on other stories as well. You've been experienced in working like for DC and for Marvel and Wildstorm and things like that. Do you guys have any other projects in the works that we should know about?
I'm trying to think what we can talk about. Well, a few years back, our comic book Genius won Top Cow's pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've finished our part as far as scripting the rest of the series. Now the artwork is being done, so Genius will be coming out from Top Cow hopefully sometime soon.
Oh, cool.
One of the things that Mark and I started to grow frustrated with was larger companies, movie companies, media companies using the comic industry and comic writers and artists as what we call IP machines, meaning, oh, well, here's Hero Complex, here's Night Watchman, here's, you know, name Saga, name any book, and it's a great idea, and we're going to use that idea. We're going to option it for little or no money, and we're going to pitch that as a TV show or film, and then when it gets made, we're going to bring in a big name writer, a big name so-and-so to do it. And the person that created it somehow in the movie world is not seen as qualified to work on their own project. And Mark and I, we had the good fortune and the frustration of having several of our projects optioned, including Monster Attack Network, which Disney optioned, and a few others. And we just grew really frustrated because everyone tells you, oh, we love the book, we love this, we love this. And then when it comes time to write the screenplay, well, no, we're going to bring in somebody else. And it's like, well, why wouldn't you trust the two people that created it? By this time, almost every screenplay gets rewritten at some point, so at least let us do the first draft. We can't screw it up that much. And so after going through that process a couple of times, Mark and I took the last year or so to step back from comics a little bit and really focus on the feature world and the television world and seeing our projects through there. And we have a bunch of scripts that are, quote, in development, you could say, at different production companies and studios. Nothing we can talk about right now, but that's really where our focus has been the last year.
Well, it makes sense. You know, the terrible truth about having things optioned is there's no guarantee that the story will look anything like it when it gets to the screen. They take your story and say, well, you know, if we could improve it, we'd do this to it and that to it. And, of course, producers want to justify their existence. And so they go to the writers and say, well, you know, change it to this and change it to that. And I know so many writers, and whenever I talk to you guys, there's always a massive amount of frustration in the fact that, you know, your story is a good story. Why not tell that story instead of something else?
Right. Well, they always say, well, we're going to bring in a writer to do his or her take. And I always say, well, isn't the take there? That's why you bought it. You know, Mark and I had one comic that I won't mention that a very well-established production company owned by an A-list movie star was pursuing, and they kept bringing in writers to do their take. And then they would come back to us and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? At a certain point, it changed so much and was warped so much that Mark and I looked at them and said, look, this movie that you're making is really cool, and we'd probably go see it, but you don't need our comic to make this movie because besides the title, there is nothing recognizable. You know, Mark and I, look, just by the nature of working in comics, unless you're a one-man band, you have to be collaborative because an artist is going to come along and take the vision further and make it their own, etc. So Mark and I are collaborative people, and we understand when something goes from one medium to another, it has to change in a lot of cases, whether it's a novel to the screen, a comic to the screen, etc. Different platforms require different things and story structure and everything. So our philosophy has always been, if it keeps the spirit and the spark of the original, then yeah, you have our blessing and let it grow and let it become something else, but it's recognizable. If you're going to change it so much, I don't really understand why you wanted it in the first place. It's not like Mark and I are big, recognizable, marketable names that our name on, you know, based on a comic by Adam Freeman and Mark Bernardin is going to help sell a movie or anything. No one knows who we are. So you're buying an idea from two unknowns and then you're completely changing it. What do you need us for?
Well, that's the thing. I feel for you. You come up with a great story, and you know it's a great story, and it sells well and does well, and then all of a sudden they decide, well, we could improve it if we would just take the main character out, if we would make the main character a woman or something like that. They always do all kinds of wild stuff. But, you know, I wish you guys a lot of success because I've enjoyed your writing. And like I said, A Hero Complex, I would love to see that into a movie. And I'd love to see this Night Watchman turn into a movie as well because it's great stuff. It just has the perfect storytelling for a film.
Thank you. Mark and I think big and commercial. It's just the way our brains are wired. Mm-hmm. When we were both studying film at our respective schools, you could sit and you can watch Battleship Potemkin 20 times and you could study those classics and that's all great and they have their place. But whenever it came time to do something on our own, we just gravitated towards the big, high-concept commercial ideas. I loved The Artist. I thought it was a great movie. I'll watch Die Hard instead anytime. It's just more enjoyable to us. Not that we don't respect it, but a lot of people from the very beginning have made comments about our work, like, it feels like a movie. Because that's how we think, and that's what we were raised on. Mm-hmm. Another project that we're doing, we wrote our first novel called Jake the Dreaming, which is with Radical Media. And that was the first reaction there. Everyone said, oh, my God, this is going to be perfect for a movie. And it will be a movie. We just can't give the details out yet. But it's because that's how we envisioned it. And I think that even when we're writing novels or writing screenplays, we're still working in that three-act structure. We're still thinking, okay, you know, you're 18 minutes into the, quote, movie. Do you know who your characters are? Do you know where the story is going? Do you know what the movie wants to be? So it just tends to be the way we think, which makes it even more frustrating when people want to come in and change it, because it's not like you have something like Cloud Atlas or something that's so unique to prose that, wow, how are you ever going to adapt this? It's there. It's adapted. You know, with something like Night Watchman or even Hero Complex, or you look at Monster Attack Network, you could technically use the graphic novel as the screenplay and shoot from that. You have a screenplay that's written and storyboarded right in front of you.
Well, believe me, I relate to your frustration, but I want to wish you and Mark a lot of success, Adam. I really appreciate that. I hope you get to do some more Kickstart books in the future. Any chance of that happening?
Yeah, you know, I have to get with Samantha and the team over there and kind of see where their heads are at and their future is at. They've always been great to us, and they've always been really supportive, so I would love to do more. I don't know where their head is at as far as the marketplace and their place in it, but yeah, I'm open to doing more with them all, anytime.
That was great. Well, Adam, I wish you guys a lot of success, and thanks for talking with me, and I hope people go out and buy Night Watchman, and while they're at it, they can pick up Hero Complex, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Let's take a look at this week's comics. The book of the week for me this time was Batman and Robin Annual Number 1. It was a really good book in a very DC intensive week, and it had to work hard to stand out, but it does a very good job. Here's the comic's description. Robin leads Batman on an unrelenting hunt across the globe for family secrets that promise to change them both forever. If you think you know Bruce Wayne, think again. I've read stories about Batman and the various Robins for years. It's really rare when a story tells me things about my favorite hero that I don't already know. But this comic does that in spades. Damian proves his detective skills by showing his father elements of the Wayne family's past that Bruce has either forgotten or never knew. He also understands his father well enough to know that it won't do to simply show what's been discovered. He has to lead his dad on a merry chase around the globe to make them worth something. This is the very first time where Damian's appeared that I actually believed he is truly Bruce's son. What Damian has in store for Bruce and for us as well adds a lot of interesting facts to the Wayne family history. It reminds me a lot of the Gates of Gotham miniseries in that there are still a lot of mythology around Gotham and the Waynes that is yet to be told. Peter J. Tomasi has crafted a powerful dynamic story that features Damian wearing a Gotham by Gaslight style costume, another fascinating thing for those of us who are longtime fans to enjoy. Ardian Syaf's art matches the style of the story with powerful, clear graphics that propel us along quickly. Everything wraps up with a wonderful Alfred moment that made me laugh out loud. Nicely done. I hope all the new 52 annuals are as good as this one. That'll be great. Rating I give is 5 out of 5. This week's new 52 reviews include Batman the Dark Knight number 16, which introduces new artist Ethan Van Sciver, who now joins Greg Hurwitz in a tale about the Mad Hatter. I also really enjoyed The Flash, in which the Scarlet Speedster fights Gorilla Grodd with the help of the Rogues. Teen Titans continues the Death of the Family event, squaring Red Robin off against the Red Hood. Aquaman takes us deeper inside the Throne of Atlantis event, while Talon number 4 has Calvin Rose trying to survive an attack by the Gotham Butcher. Next, I enjoyed Superman number 16, which draws us closer to the end of the Hell on Earth story, but not yet. Green Lantern Corps Annual number 1 concludes the rise of the Third Army and also leads us into the Wrath of the First Lantern story. The Savage Hawkman shows Hawkman wrapping up his battle with Shayera. Justice League Dark has the team back on their heels and Deadman back as a ghost again. The Fury of Firestorm number 16 has more greatness from Dan Jurgens, who I always like. Batman Inc. continues Talia's all-out war on Batman. All-Star Western shows Jonah Hex being driven mad as he recuperates at Dr. Arkham's house, where he meets many more of the Arkham family than he ever wanted to do. Red Lanterns number 16 sees a significant change has happened to the Manhunters. iVampire reveals the true origin of vampires in the New 52 through the life and times of Kane. Also out this week of note are, from DC, Batman Beyond Unlimited number 12, Before Watchmen Dollar Bill number 1, Before Watchmen Ozymandias number 5, and Injustice Gods Among Us number 1. From Boom Studios is Deathmatch number 2, a terrific book, I highly recommend it. From Dynamite we get Green Hornet number 33. From Image, the landmark issue Invincible number 100. And from Oni Press, Sixth Gun number 28. And those are the books that came out this week.
dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at wordofthenerdonline.com.
Okay, it's time again for news and previews, and back with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing, Gianluca?
I'm doing well, Wayne.
Good, good. Why don't we go ahead and jump right into the news? What news should we be aware of?
Sure, yeah. Let's start with some movie and TV stuff. Sin City 2, you know, the Robert Rodriguez, Frank Miller adaptation, the sequel here, A Dame to Kill For, recently announced that three newcomers are joining the franchise. That includes Juno Temple, who was in the films Atonement and Dark Knight Rises. Ray Liotta, who we all know, mm-hmm. he's going to be in it, as well as Jeremy Piven. He's most famous for Entourage, but you know he's been in a lot of different stuff. So they're going to be joining returning cast members Jessica Alba, Rosario Dawson, Jamie King, and Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that. I love the original one. Also, this sequel is going to have Josh Brolin and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it as well, too, I believe.
Mm.
Definitely sounds like a great sequel to a great film.
Good.
Also announced, Academy Award-winning director Ron Howard is in talks to helm a live-action adaptation of Neil Gaiman's classic The Graveyard Book. Mm. The Graveyard Book, I don't think it was a actual comic book kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
But Neil Gaiman, of course, is very well known for the Sandman series.
Mm-hmm.
Gaiman's book won the Carnegie and Newbery medals in 2008, the only book to win both of those awards, and was quickly optioned for film. Originally, Neil Jordan was attached to direct it, but that fell through, and then Disney stepped in and grabbed the rights in April of 2012.
Cool.
Yeah. In television news, NBC has ordered a pilot for The Sixth Gun,
wow.
a supernatural western written by Cullen Bunn,
mm-hmm.
run by Brian Hurt, and published mm-hmm. by Oni Press.
Mm-hmm.
Lost producer Carlton Kuse is going to be the showrunner for that.
Mm.
So best of luck, you know, in getting that pilot filmed and getting picked up, possibly.
That'd be great.
Yeah. And the original Batmobile from the 1966 TV series was auctioned recently,
mm-hmm.
and it was sold for $4.6 million.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah. But it's been making the rounds at, like, auto shows and things like that for quite a long time, so.
Yeah, but this is, like, one of the original models that was mm-hmm. created by George Barris. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Barris created the first of six Batmobiles produced for the series for $15,000 at the time, mm-hmm. using the frame of a 1955 Ford Futura concept car that mm-hmm. Barris had purchased for $1.
Wow.
The actual high bid for the car was $4.2 million by Rich Champagne,
mm-hmm.
a Temp, Arizona businessman and car collector. Fees made up the rest of the cost of the vehicle.
I have to wonder if that's his real name, Rich Champagne.
Right, exactly. Very, very kind of a hokey name there.
Yeah.
Yes. In comic book, straight up comic book news, DC Comics is using Free Comic Book Day offering to provide a preview of the highly anticipated new Superman comic from Scott Snyder and Jim Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So far, DC Comics has not announced the name of the new Superman book, but many people expect it to be called The Man of Steel. Because it will debut almost simultaneously with Zack Snyder's Man of Steel movie.
Mm-hmm.
Also included in this Free Comic Book Day book is the first portion of Jeff Johns, Richard Donner, and Adam Kubert's Superman saga, The Last Son of Krypton.
Mm.
It was chosen according to comic book resources because it introduces General Zod, who will be the primary antagonist in Snyder's Man of Steel film.
Cool.
I mean, Free Comic Book Day is always to look forward to, but this seems like a really exciting title to pick up.
Well, and something related to that while you're talking about it, the rumors have been going around that Zack Snyder wants to turn Jimmy Olsen into a girl.
Yeah, there's going to be apparently a Jenny Olsen.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. I don't know.
I think it's a rumor. I think it's a fact. I mean, it's on the IMDb list. I think there is a picture of her as Jenny Olsen, the actress, and mm-hmm. I don't think there is a Jimmy Olsen in the cast listing.
Wild, wild, wild. I don't know. When they gender bend her these things, I never quite think of that. Why don't we introduce a new character if you need a female in there?
That's true.
My humble opinion. What do I know?
Okay. In Marvel news, the solicitations for April include the announcement of the final issues of Greg Pak's Extreme X-Men, and they spell Extreme with an X, mm-hmm. not E-X. You know, it's extreme. So that ends with issue 13, and then David Lapham's Age of Apocalypse with issues number 14. Given that Brian Michael Bendis is taking over Uncanny X-Men and launching All New X-Men, actually called All New X-Men, mm-hmm. and the April launch of the new, it's just called X-Men title, written by Brian Wood, the disappearance of Age of Apocalypse and Extreme X-Men will raise few eyebrows, especially since both books fell below 20,000 copies in December. Extreme X-Men number 8 sold only 16,536 copies. Age of Apocalypse 10 sold 19,337 copies. So,
wow.
Yeah, they're just trickling out the old with the new stuff coming in.
Yeah, it's odd for X-Books to sell that low.
Well, I mean, Age of Apocalypse doesn't have X-Men in the title.
That's true.
That could be a hurt. And then, I don't know, maybe Extreme X-Men was too extreme for some people. Marvel also has, like, a huge crossover event, 10-issue one, called the Age of Ultron coming out. And they've been unveiling some lovely little pieces of art to kind of promote this. This Age of Ultron series is going to be written by Brian Michael Bendis. It's going to debut in March. It's going to start off with 3 issues in 1 month. March is going to have the first 3 issues, and then it's going to go to the more conservative 2 issues per month afterwards.
Wow. Why don't you just put it out every week and be done with it?
Right. Here's the list of the pieces that have been released. There's a rendering of Black Widow, a depiction of the Red Hulk. There's going to be a short-haired She-Hulk. She's shown lunging in attack, and there's a ruined city in the background. They have Iron Man, who's shown with his original 1960s armor, and he's on top of a car in the midst of a firefight. And again, there's a background is a half-destroyed, war-torn city. And then there's a shadowy, brooding Hawkeye walking away from that same kind of ruined city, too. And I believe his costume is more towards the original. So you have to wonder, does this take place back in time? You know, back when these characters first debuted, or is this in some alternative universe?
I don't know. I would guess the it's an alternative universe, or at least some kind of alternate future.
Right. So, I mean, there's no information on this storyline for Age of Ultron, which Bendis claims has an unguessable ending, which will have major repercussions in the Marvel universe. Let's see. It does appear from their prominence in the teaser, but anyway. So, yeah, that's basically it. And there's probably going to be the characters Wolverine, Moon Knight, Invisible Woman, and Luke Cage involved in this crossover event as well, too. So, yeah, I mean, you know, these things are expected. Marvel does them. DC does them all the time. They're obviously, when we talk about numbers come April, talking about March numbers, we're probably going to see, like, Age of Ultron up at the top of the list, I'm pretty sure. Probably breaking 6 figures, probably with multiple variant covers.
Gee. I don't know. Does anybody really still buy all these variant covers?
You know, if they don't buy them, at least these retailers are ordering them. That's how they show up on the sales charts. So, I mean, I guess they do kind of sell. I mean, some of these Marvel Now books are going to second printings.
And interesting.
They came out, the original issues came out with multiple covers. So, we'll see. I mean, obviously, people complain about this kind of stuff. I don't care for it, but it obviously sells, or else these companies wouldn't keep doing them. We wouldn't be talking about how, oh, someone just took over the charts because of this X event, you know?
I guess so.
That's kind of it for news for me. It's been kind of a light week.
Okay, well, let me pop a couple of things out that interest me. These are related to comics, some of them, just because there are comics about them. For example, J.J. Abrams has been announced as doing the next Star Wars film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't mention that because it isn't... sure, there's Dark Horse publishing comics, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, what's come up now...
That. He's handling both Star Trek and Star Wars.
Well, that's the thing. He's going to do Star Wars Episode 7... He's going to do the ones that happen to take place after the ones that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people say that the original Star Trek film was Star Wars, because if you take parts of the Star Wars films and put them next to the Star Trek film,
yeah,
you can see where the sequences are very similar, because, you know, the whole business about ice world and all these things and all that stuff. I always say that Star Trek now is the practice for Star Wars, because he's going to be directing that. That's not going to be coming out for a couple of years. I think 2015 before that actually hits.
That's true.
But then it's also come out that he's still going to be working with the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing to me, is this guy, I guess he's not going to be directing necessarily. He's going to be producing the third Star Trek film.
Okay.
And then he's still involved supposedly with Mission Impossible, you know. And so, man, this guy just has enough things to keep him going for a long time. His name's attached to other things like Person of Interest and stuff like that on the television. But, you know, you have to wonder how much does he actually have involvement with it. You know, how much does he actually do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when he was involved with Lost, you know, I'm sure the first season he was very much involved. And then, you know, you had, like, Damon Lindelof, you know, who was basically, I guess, probably running the show, like, you know, afterwards when he was off doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm. And other news, there's supposedly the list of the who the Justice League members are that are going to appear in the film. According to Latino Review, it's going to have the basics in there. They're going to have Superman,
mm-hmm,
Batman, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying there might be cameos from other people, including Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, and Hawkman. So it's time to start thinking about that. This is another film that's far off, but just any little dribbles of information are worth it. Of course, this is another 2015 one, so we shall see. You might see some other stuff. They're going to do a good thing. But somebody was suggesting that, gee, maybe we should get J.J. Abrams to do this one.
Yes.
He does every other film. And other comic news, there's word now that Judge Dredd might be gay, which is just an odd setup. I'm wondering if they're just trying to sell the comic. There's a new comic out about it. And the writers of Judge Dredd have come out and gotten people in a big snit by saying that he was likely gay, because we never actually see him talk to anybody. So writer Rob Williams said that Dredd's sexuality was buried deeply underneath his love for the law, and that he could be gay under there. You never know. I find that a little hard to believe, but that's sort of a strange thing.
I was going to say, I think I read the actual strip, and it seems like it's like maybe a dream sequence or a throwaway joke, alternative reality kind of thing. It's not like a actual ongoing major storyline.
He kisses some guy at some place outside of a bar or something. I don't know what it was. So it's just sort of a strange place, but that's... I hate to say it, but anything in comics is possible these days. So, really strange. And also, the Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome show that was originally developed is actually going to air now.
Mm.
It's going to air in its entirety on February the 10th. And so that'll give it a chance, because that one has been canceled and brought back, and who knows what all's going on. February the 10th is a Sunday night, which I never watch sci-fi on Sunday night, so I'm actually have to break down and watch that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a prequel for the regular Battlestar Galactica series. I'm not sure how many people are actually going to watch it. We'll see. It's got a very young Adama who joins the military and goes on from there.
Mm.
It's related because I remember they used to have comics for Battlestar Galactica, and they were quite popular for a while.
Yeah.
Haven't seen those in quite a long time. And the final thing is, by the time this airs, the Batman The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 will be out. And it's just a great little story about it based on the famous book.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed Michael Emerson about this, and what he said was that he used his own voice rather than trying to do something else, and he snarked it up, he said.
Right, for the Joker, yeah.
Yeah, to do the Joker. And he just, you know, it's I don't think this is my favorite version of the Joker, to be honest with you. He needed to be a little more manic, I thought, but just having his own voice snarked up didn't feel like the Joker to me. So that was the only part of the whole thing that kind of was disappointing. I liked Mark Valley as Superman. I liked other stuff. I thought the animation was good. I just didn't think that Michael Emerson really nailed the Joker very well.
Yeah. I can't wait till it's on Netflix to see it. I mean, Netflix has a lot of those DC and Marvel animated films on it right now. They have Batman Doom.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, as soon as that goes on there, I'm going to start watching it.
Part one was really good. I have to say, I really liked that. It really gave me the feeling of the original book. Part two, like I said, the Joker part is he goes on the David Endicrant show, which, of course, is supposed to be David Letterman.
Right, right.
And they actually get another talk show host, and I won't say who, to play the voice of him. And it's just kind of an interesting little twist. If you know Bruce Timm, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a talk show host that Mr. Timm does a lot with. Anyway, it's a good thing. I'm glad it's out. It's unfortunately the last of the DC direct-to-video things, but...
Oh, really? They're not going to do any more from anything else?
No, what they're going to do is they'll have them, but they'll be part of something else. They'll be like just regular Warner Brother videos. They won't be this DC direct.
Oh, I gotcha.
Too bad. I'm really going to miss these things. It's just wonderful stuff.
Well, it's going to be the same. It's just going to have a different title to it, you know?
Yeah. It'll be part of their regular cadre. It'd probably make it easier to do things like Netflix and things like that.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all the news that I have, too. So why don't we go ahead and move into previews.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to coming out in comics soon?
Yeah, for February 6th, we've kind of been blessed to have like a more expanded list to include Boom Studios.
Mm-hmm.
So Boom Studios has a lot of that Adventure Time stuff, Adventure Time with Fiona and Cake 2, four different covers for that. The Bravest Warrior, number one debut. Oh, no, actually, it's not a debut, but it's the New York Comic-Con variant cover becomes available. And this is from the same creator. And then Fairy Quest, number one debuts, actually. That's got two different covers by Humberto Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks interesting. Over on the Dark Horse side, they have the second printing for Star Wars, number one. Alex Ross does the cover, and I've heard that they're doing a third printing as well as the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been pretty successful. They also have a Star Wars Dark Times Fire Carrier number one. It's the first of a 5-issue miniseries that goes on sale. I mean, I really hope this license stays with Dark Horse, but, you know, history kind of shows that, you know, now that it's part of the Disney library, that it's possibly going over to Marvel in a year's time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our friend Arvin Nelson, there's the Rex Mundi Omnibus Volume 2 trade paperback also available by Dark Horse.
Cool.
That was Arvid's long-running series for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like his current work in Lore of the Jungle, maybe you should check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Over on DC side, there is Animal Man number 17 as well as Thing number 17. And I believe it's the last issues of the Rot World storyline.
Yeah, if it isn't as close to it.
Yeah. If you enjoyed Django Unchained, or if you missed out, I mean, on it, the second printing variant cover by Jim Lee goes on sale as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Dial H, number 9, if you're into the Dark Line.
Right.
Over on Dynamite side, Evil Ernie, number 4, by Jesse Snyder. That comes out with a lot of different covers. Garth Ennis's Red Team number 1 goes on sale too, and Howard Chaykin provides a cover for that as well. Garth Ennis also has Battlefields number 4, The Fall and Rise of Anna Karkova part 1.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Leach does the cover for that. He's a veteran artist.
Mm-hmm.
Over on the IDW side, we have the second printing of Dave Stevens' The Rocketeer Artist Edition.
Oh, wow.
Hey, could I be wrong, but it says $75.
Mm-hmm.
I got the original one, and it was $100.
Okay, I think they were originally $75.
No, I mean, these things were, like after the Dave Stevens one, you know, all these other ones were, like, $100 to $125.
Mm, okay.
Because they're huge. They are massively huge storyboard-sized hardcover books that are direct scans of the artwork. And, yeah, I wonder if they're kind of skimping on maybe the second printing or maybe they found a cheaper printer, perhaps. But no, these things are usually like in the $100 range. Although they did recently come out with like cheaper versions of these, but they're smaller books. You know, they're full issues.
That's what I was wondering, if this is a smaller edition.
Perhaps, maybe. We also have at IDW My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, number 3. Mm-hmm. There's only 3 covers for it.
Wow.
An A and a B cover, and then a retailer incentive by J. Scott Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Mars Attacks, number 7, comes out with 2 covers. And we have a bunch of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
We have issues number 18 with 3 covers. We have the 2-color classics, number 9. We have the volume 4, Sins of the Father, trade paperback. So if you like your turtles, February 6th is like a major turtle day for you. Yes. Over in Image Comics, there is a new series, Snapshot number 1. It's a 4-issue miniseries. And over on Marvel's side, there is the debut of the Fearless Defenders, number 1. And it comes out with a number of different covers. There's your favorites, the young baby variant.
Oh,
and then you have your blank variant cover as well, too.
Great.
I know. Yes. And that's basically kind of it for me in terms of what I see interesting.
All right, let me run down a couple. Look at me, and I'll go backwards.
Go ahead.
Superior Spider-Man number 3, which I've given up on already. I just don't have. Yeah, I don't care for it. This notion that you got Dr. Octopus and Peter Parker's ghost following him around.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. So I'm off of that. But for those who are still buying it, number 3 is out. I actually sold my Amazing Spider-Man number 700, believe it or not.
Really? How much?
Wasn't much more than the cover. Cover was $7.99 and one for $8.50. Whoopee.
Aww.
Yeah, I said, if I'd have gotten it before it hit, then I could sell it for hundreds. But no such luck. And then I got the Road to Oz, number 5 of 6. I always love those Oz books. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. Then we go up to Hit Girl, number 5 of 5. We move up into the Image Comics, Perhaponauts, Danger Down Under, number 4, which is the last one of that miniseries, which is really good. Then we get to Manhattan Projects, number 9, which I like. Guarding the Globe, number 6, which is great. Great Pacific, number 4, which I also really, really, really like. That's a very good one, too. And we talked about IDW some. There's 2 sci-fi franchises that are still going on. Star Trek number 17. And then you got a whole bunch of Transformers ones. There's More Than Meets the Eye number 13. Prime Rage of the Dinobots number 3 of 4. Regeneration 1. Spotlight Megatron one shot. So yikes, if you're a Transformers guy on the 3rd, you're going to want to have lots of money, haven't you? We get up into Dynamite. Dynamite also has Kevin Smith's The Bionic Man, number 16, and that's it for them. We get into DC. I have a lot more where I'm interested.
All right.
Batwing, number 17. DC Comics, there's a Green Arrow action figure for $22.95. It's kind of expensive for an action figure.
Yeah.
Then we get Detective Comics, which I'm really liking, number 17. They've got a really interesting storyline going in there. Now, Earth 2, which is one of my very favorite comics. I really am surprised how good that is. Green Arrow, number 17. Mr. Lemire is going to be taking over. He hasn't already. Human Bomb, number 3 of 4 by Palmiotti and Gray. Dark Knight, I think, has a new artist on it. And Phantom Stranger, number 5, which continues along. I'm not sure how great it is. Then we've got Smallville, season 11, number 10. Then we've got, World's Finest, number 9 is a great one that I really like. So,
mm-hmm.
And Dark Horse, I do want to mention, I used to buy these all the time. I haven't for a long time, but sure. Hellboy in Hell, number 3, is out. Mm-hmm. I used to like that book a lot, but it got sort of repetitive, and so I stopped buying it.
Yes.
And then we get into Boom. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Planet of the Apes, Cataclysm, number 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's 3 covers. And then a guy that grew up in my hometown, Tom Durenick, is an artist on Hypernaturals for Boom Studios. And Hypernaturals number 8 is out.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
So he does those. Anything else we should mention before we call it quits?
I know you're a big Batgirl fan. I'm surprised you didn't mention the 2 volumes that are also going on sale.
Yeah, my problem is I have all the individual issues, so when I do that, I generally don't get the trade cover and trade papers.
Also, maybe our listening audience may want to know that.
That's true.
Volume 1, the trade paperback version, finally goes on sale. Originally, there was a hardcover edition. And Volume 2, the hardcover edition, Nightfall, goes on sale.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course, get some
year, and maybe the trade paperback version will go on sale for Volume 2.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be the case. But yeah, I like Batgirl. I'm glad Gail Simone's going to still be doing it. So,
yep.
Looking forward to that. Okay, anything else?
No, that's about it, I think.
Okay, on that note, then, we will come to a close for this week's news and previews. Thanks, as always, John Luca, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
And that's all I have for this week's episode. Next week, be sure to listen in as I interview Paul Jenkins, longtime and well-known comics writer who's doing Deathmatch for Boom Studios. He has a lot to say, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to him. But until then, keep reading your comics.